Welcome to episode 69 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenal.
And a very special welcome to you all to the season premiere of season 6. We are so excited to be back and we have an amazing guest lined up for you today. And we've been following her for over a year now.
Aranya Johar is a 19-year-old poet and activist based in Mumbai. She started writing poetry at the age of 11 and started performing spoken word poetry at the age of 13. But the world and you guys know her for her viral performance on A Brown Girl's Guide to Gender, which is a spoken word poem she released last year with Unerased Poetry.
In the year of activism following this viral poem, A Brown Girl's Guide to Gender, Aranya has proven to be one of the smartest minds of our generation, both talking about and creating content pertaining to topics that we all need to be paying a little bit of attention to. So we discuss feminism, gender, mental health, hard work, privilege, and a milieu of other things with her today. So without further ado, let's jump right into the show. Welcome to the show, Aranya. Can you believe that we've been talking about doing this for 4 months now?
It's been, I'm so excited to finally do this, but also my exams have taken a toll on me through every dynamic possible. I'm so glad I'm finally doing this though. It's so good to be talking to both of you.
Yeah, and in these past 4 months, so much has happened. Meenal and I cannot wait to get into this, you know, much-awaited conversation. So thank you so much for joining us today.
No, of course. Thank you.
So, Aranya, this is not the first time your name is being mentioned on this show. Around this time last year, we interviewed Simar Singh, mm-hmm. the founder of Unerased Poetry. This is actually episode 28, if you do want to go back and listen. So we spoke to him about his poetry and we complimented him on his viral poem that on marital rape. Mm-hmm. And he actually said, oh, well, you know, my poem was nothing. Aranya is the real star at Unerased. So we've been waiting to speak to you since episode 28, really.
I'm so honored. Thank you so much. And it's so weird to hear that Simar says nice things about me because we have a very sibling sort of relationship where we tell everyone apart from each other that we love each other.
Okay.
But when we're together, all we're doing is making fun of each other.
So this is your chance to tell Simar that you love him, but then we can pretend as if it never happened.
Like it never happened. Simar, you're really awesome and I'm so glad of what you're doing, but also you are... you have really bad jokes and you need to give me all your books, which I asked for.
Okay, so Aranya, the poem that Simar mentioned on our show was A Brown Girl's Guide to Gender. And he was like, have you heard this? And of course, we'd heard it. We'd heard you perform this spoken word poem. But before I ask you the first question, can you tell our listeners how old you were when you performed this?
I was 18 when I performed it.
Yeah, and can you also tell them what A Brown Girl's Guide to Gender was about?
Sure. So I wrote this piece early last year, basically about what it's like being a brown girl in India. And I tried to cover as much as I could. And I spoke about marital rape, acid attack, sexualization from a young age, marital rape as well. And just in general, you know, something every girl goes through or every brown girl specifically goes through. And I tried to make it as personal, but also as universal as I could. And although I loved that people resonated with it so much, I realized that this was no longer just a brown girl's story. This was every girl's story. And it was just really good writing about it because I don't use, at least before the piece, I didn't really write about women issues a lot because I always thought there was so much online and I always wanted to contribute in a unique aspect, and I think that piece really helped me do it. It was less artistic but more raw, and I think that's what people really liked about it.
But what inspired you as an 18-year-old to have such an in-depth insight into gender inequality? Like, did something happen or did something trigger that?
I think, to begin with, every woman, and I hope not every man, has their own story of assault. And, you know, I think I realized that we normalize it to such a large extent. I remember sitting during lunch break with my classmates in school and we were just talking about it so casually. And that's when I realized that, you know, we were completely desensitized to it. We were so used to men masturbating in public. We were so used to changing the routes we go home from or changing the way we dress depending on where we're going. And that's why I look back and I said, this is not okay, because I'm pretty sure my brother hasn't thought about these things. So I think it really started then when I realized that it's not, we're lacking somewhere. And we need to talk about it. I realized that no one was talking about it. And even if you did see people talking about it, they were older and they contributed in a more, I feel like every time I heard people talk about it, it was a news hour debate and it was a very timely issue based on, say, a recent rape or something like that. And I realized that we had to talk about it without any timely situation. We need to talk about it with all our cards on the table and really have a conversation with everyone who really cared about it. So I think that's what really pushed me.
And you wrote this poem within just an hour after listening to Kendrick Lamar and J. Cole, is that right?
Yes, that is true. Yeah. I take a lot of inspiration from hip-hop because I feel I learned so much about how writing can be activism through hip-hop, because Kendrick Lamar, J. Cole, a lot of these rappers use their rap to talk about Black Lives Matter movement. And I thought, if I don't use my writing to start conversations that I really care about, then what am I really using my writing for anyway?
And you got into slam poetry at the age of 13. And I remember reading that you...
I started writing when I was 11, but I started performing when I was around 13. And I had to sneak my way in for my first performance because it was at a bar. And I was so nervous. And that was the first time I lied on the internet.
And you pretended to be 18 years old. Was that right?
Yeah, exactly. And I remember that was the first time I ever lied on the internet, because to register, you had to sign up online. And the first question they ask is, please tick this box if you are 18 and above. And that was the first time I tapped on it. And my mom found it so funny that the first time I was sneaking into a bar was not to drink, but to perform really sad poetry. My mom still gets a kick out of it. But I think the most important thing was, like, it was such a welcoming community. And also when we went there, the place I perform at, Ibar, they'd have this ritual where after every performer, you were given a shot. And of course, since everyone knew I wasn't of age to drink, they would invite my mom. So the host would, you know, add a comment and say, Mama Johar, can we have you here for your shot? My mom would come up, everyone would have their drinks up, they'd celebrate my performance, and that would be it.
Okay. And you'd just stand in the corner watching everyone having a good time.
I'd just awkwardly stand and wait till I could finally take my own shot.
But what inspired a 13-year-old to take up something that wasn't very mainstream, say, 5 years ago, like slam poetry? What inspired you to go up there and perform?
So I tried art and I was really bad at it. And my brother, who I thought was cool and think is cool, but don't tell him I said that, my brother started writing rap around...
Just like Simran.
When I was... Yeah, like Simran. When I was 13, and I thought my brother was cool, and I thought maybe there's a possibility that he's cool because he writes. So that really pushed me to write as well. Mm-hmm. And also my father used to write poetry. So my dad, he lives away from me because of his job. He works as a hotel manager, so there's constant shifting. But the one thing we really bonded over was poetry. And I realized that I got to share a special bond with him once I started writing. That really pushed me to write as well.
When we spoke to Simmer, we spoke about actually going up on stage and giving a performance, because writing is just one side of it. But obviously you have to go up and perform. And Simmer told us that he had some training growing up with a family, you know, who were involved in theater. Did you have any training of that sort?
My training honestly was rap, because there was a time I was convinced I was going to be the first female rapper of India. And I used to rap. I used to write a lot of rap when I used to write poetry as well. And I used to practice a lot of raps that were written by other artists, just to see, you know, certain songs need a certain attitude or a certain style or a certain way you say it. And that also helped me practice how clear I am on stage and how to make sure everything I said was audible. And I made space in case I said something that had to be understood, small things like that. But also my brother really supported me. So every time I'm the kind of person where if I write an angry piece, you won't realize it's an angry piece. So he would sit me down and say, feel everything you're saying. Feel your piece. Mm. And I think that was the first time it really showed was Brown Girl's Guide to Gender, because before that I wrote very soft pieces because I wasn't ready to be very vulnerable on stage. There were few pieces before that, but it hasn't been consistent. But that time when I was on stage, I didn't feel like I was there very truly, because when I performed this piece live for the first time with an audience, I felt everything. I saw everything I was talking about. Like when I mentioned Lakshmi, the victim of the acid attack, I saw her face. I remember I spoke about Nirbhaya. I remember when Nirbhaya's discussions were happening on news channels, they had a blurred photo of a girl in a hospital bed. And that came before my eyesight. And as I spoke about these different incidents and events that have happened in my life or I've speculated, they all just came rushing in. And I think people really enjoyed being to like share this very vulnerable moment with me, even if they were absolute strangers. And I think that's one reason people really resonated with the piece, because I was naked on stage telling you about what it's like. Mm-hmm. And I think people really resonated with how raw and how, I would say, how focused I was in just saying what I had to say.
You know, personally, Aranya, I would never be able to pull off performing a poem the way you or Simar do, because it's just not about writing the poem alone, is it? It's also about the rhythm and the pace at which you speak. I mean, if you make even one tiny mistake while you're on stage, then the entire performance could possibly get disrupted.
You know, I think there's a very big difference between recitation and spoken word, because recitation is what people usually begin with. And I think recitation is a very important part to begin spoken word, because you need to know how you're performing. You need to figure out your piece before you figure out how to perform your piece. And spoken word has a little bit of theatrics, I would say. You are a performer on stage and the audience has come here to be entertained. And as much as your stage time is yours, you're also on stage to entertain the audience that's sitting in front of it. So I try to work on my pieces a lot in terms of how will I perform this. And also, I have a few pieces that are only spoken word pieces. You would never be able to enjoy this piece as page poetry. And I really enjoy spoken word poetry because I like to see people respond to my words as I'm saying them. Like, I'll give you an example. I'll give you an example on Brown Girl's Guide to Gender. There was a part where I moan on stage. And
yeah.
People become so uncomfortable when I do it live, because the only time you hear a sexual moan is probably when you're by yourself and, you know, you have your personal time, quote unquote. But that was the first time where you're sharing a room with 50 people, and in some cases, 15,000 people. And you hear someone sexually moan and you're suddenly hyper aware of everything. You know, I see men messing with their sleeves. I see women messing with their dupattas. People checking, like, you know, checking the time on their phone, because they just don't know how to respond to a woman actually talking about how she is sexualized to such an extent. And I love doing this live because it really makes me hyper aware of the words I'm saying, and also everyone is just listening once I do that. And it doesn't matter what you're doing before. You could have been talking to your friend, but if you hear someone moan, immediately you're going to look at stage and be like, what is happening? What did I miss? So I love having that pullback and having people look at me and say, holy crap, she just moaned on stage. And now I want to know why she moaned on stage. And then realizing that that's exactly what we amount to. I was on stage and I spoke a little bit before I moaned, but the reason you listened was because I moaned.
And I remember reading somewhere that, a journalist came to find you backstage before a performance, and she found you sitting in the green room chanting your piece to yourself like it was a mantra. And I was wondering if that's still your process, because you've given so many performances by now. But is that still your process before you perform a new piece?
Absolutely, because I still have a certain amount of stage fright. And I think that's good because I end up practicing a lot before performances. Mm-hmm. And also, I have really bad anxiety. So practicing my piece helps me feel more familiar with it. And even though I've performed Brown Girl's Guide to Gender about a bazillion times by now, there have still been times I've got on stage and forgotten my piece. So it really pushes me to, you know, practice further, work further, look at the ways I can perform the piece in different ways. And Also, something I particularly, like something that really amounted of this is, there were three times after the first performance of mine that I forgot Brown Girls Guide to Gender in between of the piece, and I used that to create another piece. And that's something I'm working on, which I'm going to put up soon. And that's, in fact, a love piece, which, you know, an audience has never seen me do. So I'm really looking forward to that.
So, you know, Aranya, when we started our podcast almost 2 years ago, I think our first episode was about love marriage. Is that right, Ankita? Was it love marriage?
Yeah.
Yeah, so our first episode was about love marriage. And Aranya, I was raised in quite a traditional household. So these are the sort of things we don't really talk about. Only now we talk about it, but back then we didn't. And our first episode was love marriage. And I was actually quite afraid to what my parents would say if they saw that. And actually the first reaction was like, Meenal, you shouldn't be talking about stuff like that. Like, you know, but you go on stage and you say phrases like, vaginas are meant to be fucked, breasts are meant to be sucked. And it takes a certain mettle for a teenager to go up on stage and openly talk about these things, you know. And you mentioned earlier, you know, you moan and you can see that people are getting quite uncomfortable. So when you went on stage and you had the idea to talk about these things, were you ever worried about your parents being in the audience, or were you worried about making them uncomfortable?
So very frankly, I don't really cuss a lot. So my parents were first very excited, I would say, to hear me cuss. And
oh, that's hilarious.
My mom found it so funny. She was like, "Start, go from the start. I need a moment to pace myself." And so that was like, I rarely cuss, and you know, my brother was also so excited to hear me cuss, because even when I'm rapping, I censor every cuss word. So it was kind of a thing. And also they realized that, hey, I had to say it like that for it to be, any other variation would have been too soft. And this was the only way people would be able to understand the severity of the problem. And also, I didn't use the F word as a phrase. I use it as a verb, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I didn't use, it's like saying fornicating.
Yeah.
I didn't mean it as, oh, damn. So, I think, you know, that really helped me feel better considering me cussing, because I don't like to cuss a lot. I feel like cussing is very uncreative. And you can definitely think of much more creative ways to...
Yeah, you know, we were told in school that if you cuss a lot, it means that your vocabulary isn't very good. Have enough words in your dictionary.
Yeah, I remember once I was fighting with my brother and I very angrily called him a noodle, and he was more offended by that than anything I could have said. But also, you know, I think my dad hears my poetry immediately after I get done writing it. So he gives me a lot of feedback on writing. And he was like, you know, I really like how you said it, because no one is saying it that way. And that's what we need to start these conversations. And also I come from a fairly liberal family. My mom cusses more than I do. And that made it a lot easier for me to actually pick this up and talk about these issues, because I keep telling people that if I didn't have my parents' support, I don't think there's even an ounce of me that would have done what I did last year, because it is a very vulnerable thing performing, especially a piece like that. It's a very vulnerable thing putting yourself online. It's a very vulnerable thing letting people critique art that is so personal. And knowing that my parents supported me through that really made a lot easier. And also, it didn't create that whole conversation of, I don't think my parents were asked, how are you okay with the daughter saying these things, considering the topic I was talking about. Mm-hmm. And they know that, my piece doesn't boil down to that. They realize that it was a lot more than just me cussing.
Well, Aranya, I think that's really amazing, because I feel like when you have that kind of support, it gives you that creative liberty to, you know, just say what you want and write what you really believe in. Just going back to our podcast, Ankita and I, we released a video on periods. And so what we did was we made it into a YouTube video, and we wanted to create an educational video of what a period is. And because I'm a medical student as well, like, I put in some stuff in there, so for people to understand, for young girls to understand what a period is and what you need to do and how to stay hygienic, all of that. And a neighbor of ours in Gibraltar he saw that I did that. So he has three kids who are about five. One is five, one is eight, and the other is 10. So they're quite young. But the kids, obviously every kid has an iPad in their hand. Every kid knows what's happening on the internet. So they just searched my name and this period video came up. Mm-hmm. And he got really pissed off. And he's like, you know, well, meanwhile, my kids shouldn't be watching this. I said, well, it's not my fault. They have an iPad at their disposal, you know? Mm-hmm. So this whole
they
thing
could
just
be watching
spiraled.
A lot worse.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, they could be, exactly. So this whole thing spiraled into something just so crazy. And ultimately, the end result was that they actually cut contact with me.
That's unfortunate for them.
Yeah, and Aranya, just keep this in mind, like, we were family friends with them for, like, a good 10 years.
Wow.
And for that one video, they were like, you know.
Mila went ahead and destroyed the whole thing.
Yeah, like, I had to ruin all of it, right? they actually called my parents up and said, we don't want our children having anything to do with Mila because Mila's a bad influence.
I think my parents feel that same way, that you're a bad influence on me.
Yes. As in, I'm a bad influence on you. Okay.
Wow. I'm just saying.
So Aranya, you see, like, you know, when we had discussions, now I really don't care. Mm-hmm. But back then when we had discussions, you know, what episode shall we release? What shall we talk about? Mm-hmm. I felt like there was a big block in my creativity. Yeah. So it's really amazing that you have this family. So you never have to worry about, like, you know, log kya kahenge. Who cares about that? Exactly. You're going out there, you're making a difference. And that's really amazing.
Absolutely. You know, that's something I keep, like, a lot of girls message me saying that, you know, I want to talk about these things as well, but I don't know if my family would be supportive. And mm-hmm. the really unfortunate thing is I understand why they would not, because I know, and I'm sure everyone knows, multiple cases of female journalists being killed just for having an opinion or being sent rape threats, death threats. And I went through that as well. So telling young girls that it's a safe, like, you will feel safe after doing it would be a lie, because it is when you're putting yourself online, you're going to have these things coming irrespective of who you are, but especially if you are a woman. And I think I keep telling everyone that, you know, the most important part about my career is becoming hyper aware of my privilege, because I know for a fact that if I was from, say, a traditional household or less fluent in English or didn't have good education or have accessibility to education or accessibility to education in English, multiple privileges I didn't know I had created this opportunity for me to do this. And I need to realize that every time I tell girls to go for it and do the same, I realize that not all of them have the same privileges. So whenever I talk to them, I have to ask them, you know, what grade are you in? How old are you? Have you spoken to your parents about these things before? Is your mother fluent in English? Things like this, because it really helps you understand the kind of background they come from. And obviously, the struggle to talk about these things compared to me and, say, a person from a lower caste and class will definitely be different.
Yeah. And this is interesting when you talk about, you know, putting yourself out there on the internet as well, because I was just thinking how we don't have, like, the biggest following or anything of that sort. But once we interviewed Gurmehar Kaur on our podcast, we had, like, random people sending us all kinds of threats. Yeah. And we just interviewed Gurmehar. We did our research. We found out what the problem was. And we wanted her to tell her story. It was as simple as that. And at the end of the day, if you read Gurmehar's actual story, you just get baffled by how ridiculous the whole controversy was.
Exactly.
And yeah, and yeah, so putting yourself on the internet, having a voice, knowing how to use that voice, thinking about every single thing that led up to the opportunity of being able to have this voice. And we were speaking of courage and metal, Aranya, earlier. And I feel like we can't progress in this conversation without mentioning something that happened pretty close to Valentine's Day this year, when you publicly named and shamed your ex-boyfriend, Atharva Purandare, on Facebook. So do you want to tell our listeners what happened there?
So I was in a relationship with this boy around a year ago. We were together for a few months, and I'd never really been in an intimate relationship with any person before Atharva. And I got to share a lot of my firsts with him, and I realized that he had multiple times, either not asked for my consent or completely disregarded when I said no to us doing certain physical acts. And luckily, you know, I realized at a time before I got to share myself with him entirely. And
yeah.
I look back and I realize that no one ever told me that it is okay to be mad if your boyfriend doesn't ask for consent or doesn't listen to your no. No one told me that he should listen to my no. And in fact, the very opposite is I've heard so much. Even if you see shows like Sex in the City and stuff like that, they create this mindset that if your partner, irrespective of gender, wants sex, you have to give it to them. And that kind of mindset was something that was ingrained from a very young age for multiple people. And especially for me, I always thought I was the kind of person who would be able to call out sexual assault when it happened, until it happened to me and it took me time to realize. And also, what was especially, what really helped me though, is that I got get on call with him and I explained to him and I spoke to him about every single time I had said no and he disregarded my consent or he blamed it on alcohol or something like that. So that made me feel a lot better, and we ended that conversation with him promising me that he would not do anything similar again. And that made me feel a lot better, because I realized that at least I'm saving another girl from going through something like what I've gone through. But then later last year, I found out that he had done it again. And that's what really pushed me to make the post about.
Yeah, and the thing that really stood out to me was that we, as girls from a South Asian community, we're always told to not react, whether it's in relation to Eve teasing or even abuse. And if we date someone and our families know about this dating that's going on, they ask us to keep it under wraps. And if we go through a breakup after having the audacity to date, then we are shamed for it. And, you know, and yet there you were talking about this relationship and boundaries and so many things. And you were talking about someone who acted inappropriately without consent. So the minute I read that, I still remember where I was sitting. I was sitting on my dining table. My husband was about to leave for work and I called him and I said, look at this. Look at this girl who's written this post. I wanted to hug you for being about half a decade younger than me and for showing courage that I never had, Aranya. So I really applaud you for that.
Thank you so much. And I think in general, it was really important for me, because it took me a lot to realize that it is still wrong, even though I was in a relationship with him. Because that's not a conversation we have with our girlfriends. We don't read about it in pop culture. We definitely read about ask for consent, but we don't hear that things like you need to ask for consent even if you are in a relationship. And I feel like I needed other people who were in relationships to also realize that this is an important part. And also I realized that consent was important once I got in a relationship with a boy who would ask for consent every single time he would do something. Even if he put his arm around me, he'd be like, is that okay? He'd hold my hand, is that okay?
Yeah.
And I realized that this is how it should have been. And, you know, even if my body language told him I was okay with it, he would still check. And that made me realize that he learned this, but a lot of people don't do this. And I realized that there have been instances where I should have asked and I made a habit to start asking as well. And I realized that, in terms of like holding hands, I would have never asked a boy if he was okay with it. I would sneak my hand through and see if he held it too. But the fact that he was so upfront about it to make sure I wasn't uncomfortable really made me realize that there have been times where I've seen my friends not ask their boyfriend to consent before they've kissed them. I've seen my friends have instances where, they've done a lot more with a boy and neither of the parties have asked for consent. And also, in my head, he made consent a really cool thing. And, that's something that was really important. I feel like pop culture glamorizes this whole thing of the girl is talking and then he just kisses her to shut her up. And I realized that is so flawed in a concept. I've seen this in so many Disney movies. It was in Princess Diaries. And I just sat back and I was like, holy shit, we've normalized this culture entirely. And that's why I thought it was important for me to talk about it, so other people in relationships also realize that it is important to ask for consent.
Well, Aranya, we spoke to Jayashree Mishra, I think it was last year, sometime last year, and she went through something which is like quite the opposite, where she was in a relationship and she sort of had to stay stuck in that relationship for some time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we discussed the fact that to some extent as Asian women, as Desi girls, we're groomed to always compromise mm-hmm. when we're in a relationship. So if there's something you feel uncomfortable with or something you may not agree with, mm-hmm. you just have to just get on with it. Mm-hmm. So there are girls who choose to remain in relationships despite ill treatment or mm-hmm. abuse, and even if though they want to say something, that they may not. So it's worse because they also feel caged and tied down even without, mm-hmm. you know, even if there's no legal documents. So I think we have two extremes right now, where we have people who are very open and quite bold, like you are, then we have people who are quite timid and too scared to say anything because, well, that's just how we're raised and it's engraved in our brains.
And at this point, Aranya, I'd like to share a story, both for your benefit as well as for our listeners. So I know this girl in India who's maybe a few years older than me. So once upon a time, she was doing a professional course, and then she started dating this guy. She was sexually active with him, and later she found out that he'd been sleeping around and he was cheating on her. Mm-hmm. She went through a breakdown as a result of this because she was sexually active, so she thought that she believed that she would marry him in the end. Mm-hmm. That was her thought process. So she dropped out of her course. She stayed at home for about a year, and then she joined some other distance learning course in a random subject. And that is when she started dating this other guy. Again, she was sexually active. She truly believed that she was going to marry this guy. But with time, she started sharing things with me, like how he was demanding a dowry, and he was telling her that his mother was bringing him proposals from richer families. And on top of everything else, he was, you know, very controlling. He was suspicious of her male friendships, and it reached a point where he would sleep with her first and then start beating her, kicking her off the bed, saying things like she was not faithful to him. And, you know, mind you, he literally had nothing to go on for these accusations, because he himself had blocked all the numbers of her male friends from her phone, and he'd also made her delete her social media accounts, but he was still, you know, beating her. There was even one incident that she mentioned where she got so frightened by this that she just moved to the corner of the room and she was screaming because he was hitting her. So he covered her mouth and then fucked her again, literally using the words that I'm going to fuck you now because that's the only way you're going to shut up and stop screaming.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that happened. And I heard of this when I was about, I think, 20. And I obviously told her that she had to run in the opposite direction and she had to get the hell out of this relationship. Mm-hmm. But she told me that this would be the second time she'd be running from a guy that she'd been sexually active with. And according to her, that would mean that she was a loose woman. And she told me that the advice that I gave her would be the advice she would give any other girl in her situation, but she simply couldn't follow her own advice in this mm-hmm. case, because this is the second time she's been sexually active with someone and she would be loose. And mm-hmm. here's the part that kind of kills me inside every time I say it out loud. A few months ago, she got married to this guy.
Oh my God.
And a few months ago, this happened. And ever since the wedding took place, I have not been able to stop thinking about this mental cage that so many girls from our generation put themselves in. Mm-hmm. I simply cannot get it out of my head.
Wow, that's... You know, I think it's especially... I think things like this really mess with me, because this is... Whenever I talk to people about feminism, they think it's women against men, but it's actually men and women and, you know, non-gendered individuals against patriarchy. Because if this woman has internalized patriarchy, and it's not a man telling her she's loose, it's not another woman telling her it's loose, it's her own opinion about herself. Yeah. And situations like these, you know, the thing is, what's really unfortunate is my mom has told me story similar to this, where a woman she's done things which break the idea of what a good a good woman by Indian society standards would be.
Standards.
Maybe she'd drink, or she mm-hmm. Quote unquote, maybe she'd drink often, or she would be sexually active without being in the relationship, and how they would although they would engage in these things, they would shame themselves for doing it or be embarrassed about it. And I feel like, oh man, I don't even know what to say. Oh. I can't believe that she married him. I feel really bad right now.
It was very recent, and even yesterday when I was cooking dinner that I told you about that I burnt yesterday also, I just can't shut up about this. And my husband and I have this conversation about, man, like, there are choices you make sometimes, yeah, and there are consequences for those choices, and you have to be realistic sometimes. When I was dating when I was 16 and one of my boyfriends was extremely controlling, my mother, and he would tell me what to wear and things, and I was listening, like, because sometimes not all teenagers are smart like you, I don't know, some teenagers like me are really stupid. So I was listening to him.
I had my stupid face as well.
Yeah. So I was, you know, dressing according to his the way he was asking me to. Yeah. And my mother took me to the side and said, listen, you should never be under the impression that this kind of control freak behavior is going to get better with time. It only gets mm-hmm. worse. And that's what I repeated to this girl as well, that if he's hitting you now, it's never going to go away. It's only going to get worse. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, this happens. And I just can't stop thinking that nobody told her. I wouldn't have ever known that she had a boyfriend before. Her family would have never known. Nobody would have known about this. Nobody would have stigmatized anything. If she broke up with this guy, more than half the world would never know.
Yeah.
But it was all in her head that I would be a loose woman if I went ahead. And
yeah, and also, like, what's really sad is she has put her, like, the way society and how the way society may perceive her over the, honestly, and I don't mean this in a exaggerative fashion, over her survival. Yeah. Because if he is beating her, then there is, you never know when it's going to become too much or when it's going to be too bad.
Yeah,
you know, especially
that's exactly. Yeah, you need to be realistic about this.
Yeah,
well, I don't have boyfriend stories because I'm not as cool as you girls. one thing I would like to add here is that, so Aranya, I was raised in Europe, so this sort of behavior wasn't very very common for me. Actually, I saw relationships from a very, very different angle, and of course there are abusive men out there, there are abusive people out there, of course there's no doubt about that, but I also saw relationships from a different light, where I feel like girls were quite cunning, girls were quite manipulative, and again, I'm not generalizing, I'm just saying that seen both sides of the story. You know, and I've had friends who've acted in that way. Mm-hmm. So for me to hear that all these stories that Ankita tells me, or stories that I hear on the internet, it's quite bizarre. But I think that one thing that I was very privileged to be raised with was this education towards males and females. So even when I was in school, so this is, I'm talking about like before the year 2000, when I was not even 10 years old, we had people coming in, social workers coming in, telling us about what it's like to be abused. So any young girl who was experiencing that knew that they were getting abused. So I was raised with that privilege. I think that in India now, especially, you know, we have advocates who are rooting to educate men to become equalists or feminists, like Farhan Akhtar, for example. You know, he's doing his role in all of that. But Aranya, how do you think we can perhaps bring it down to a very basic level? Like I said, I was taught in school. Do you think that we can create a system where children are taught from a very young age so that when they grow up to be teenagers, none of this happens? Because we have to catch it early.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the reasons I shared my story, because I realized that no one ever told me that, you know, this is also abuse. And I think the earlier we start sensitizing children to what is abuse and what is not abuse, it will definitely make it easier for them to call it out as it's happening to them and to people around them as well. And but my only problem with this is I wouldn't know for example, you would say, let's talk to them about it once they hit puberty. But there's a chance they could have gone through this before puberty. So I wouldn't really know when would be the right time frame to sit down and tell your child about these kind of things. I think that's my biggest dilemma nowadays. Because I remember this whole rape case that happened recently with the Kathua rape case. And the girl was 8 years old. And I remember reading this Facebook post by a mother. And she said, my child is 8. How do I talk to her about abuse when the question she's asking me is, why is the sky blue? You know, how do you prepare your
the
child?
Innocence.
Yeah, absolutely. And I completely understand that mother's concern to educate her child about this. But how do you educate such a young child about such big concepts, such big words? And the basic thing you begin with is like good touch and bad touch.
Yeah.
But it's so much worse, you know.
Yeah. You know, Aranya, it was just the other day, one of my friends was saying, like, she, it's really absurd when I actually say it out loud, but she said, I don't know how to tell my niece that Santa Claus doesn't exist. And now you mentioned that you're trying to tell an 8-year-old something completely. You see, like, the disparity in privilege that I see around me a lot of the times. And, you know, you have 8-year-old girls in India who have to be told these ugly truths at such a young age, which is really sad. But Aranya, speaking of things which we want to speak about more in our society and our community, you also talk a lot about your anxiety on. I've seen you on Instagram stories, and you know you're quite open about it. Now, obviously, mental health is a completely different topic and something that obviously needs a lot of development and improvement in India. But what triggered you to say, actually, people need to know about this as well?
I think because people thought that I was a perfect girl in a perfect life. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that's like one flaw I find with India is that we take idol worshipping very seriously. And once my video shot up, I realized that there were these young girls and boys following me. And for some reason, they thought I was better than them or cooler than them or something like that. And every time I meet them, I just tell them that, you know, we're the same people. I am worrying about my exam results. You're worrying about your exam results. At the end of the day, no matter how many views I get or how many movies an actor's been in, we're having the same worries. We're struggling through the same things. And this whole idea of someone living a perfect life is so flawed to me. And I was really young. I mean, I used to really like Shah Rukh Khan, and I met him at an airport, and he was an absolute, he was really rude to me. Really, really rude to me. I was a baby.
Oh my God, I thought you were going to say an absolute angel.
He was really rude to me. And so, like, he left the gate, and I was like, hi, I really like your work. I'm a big fan. The first movie I ever cried in was because Shah Rukh Khan died, because he has, which one was it, with Preeti Zinta? I can't remember.
Oh, Kal Ho Na Ho.
Yeah, and I thought he was really going to die, and I cried. And my mom was like, it's okay, he just died in the movie, and I was really happy. So when I met him very soon after that, and I was telling him that I really liked the movie or something like that. And he completely ignored me. And my mom got so mad. She was like, no one ignores my daughter. My daughter has been here saying hi to you for the past 2 minutes. You go back and say hi to her. He turned around because he had gone ahead. He came back. He like pat my head and he went back to his car. And that's when I realized
that. Mother bullied Shah Rukh Khan.
My mom was like, no one treats my daughter like shit. No one, not even Shah Rukh Khan. And that's when I realized that, like, wow, really famous people can be really bad people as well. And that's when I realized that I need to, not then, but later, but, like, I realized that I have to appreciate Shah Rukh Khan as an actor, but not necessarily as a person. And I think that was, like, the biggest takeaway for me. And I wanted people to think the same. Like, I wanted people who follow my work to be able to call me out when I'm doing something stupid and when I'm doing something wrong. And the best way I could do that is by being completely honest with them. And I wanted people to see that, you know, there is a side of every person you don't see. And for very long, I didn't post about my anxiety at all. And I just started recently because I realized that my anxiety is a very big and actual part of my life, which my followers never get to see. And the only way they get to know me better is if they see that this is also a reality. And I think for me, I like to document, like tell them sometimes why it happens, because for me, I feel like sometimes my anxiety is triggered off by very random things. When you read about anxiety in poetry or online or on movies or whatever, it'll always be like, they have an exam and now they're having a panic attack, or their father just died and now they're left wealth and therefore divided between three siblings, that is causing a panic attack. And I wanted people to realize that panic attacks can happen for very stupid reasons as well, but they're as valid as any of the situations I mentioned earlier. And also about how it's different person to person, and how I deal with it personally, because you know, a lot of people do meditation and all that stuff, which doesn't work for me. So I have other alternatives. And also just like, we haven't spoken about, like, a lot of the people I look up to, who I got to meet, like Rega Jha and Tanmay Bhatt, they also have therapists and they didn't speak about it for very long. So I realized the earlier I start encouraging people to start seeing professionals, the better it is for them. Because I went through, I was really depressed when I was in school and I didn't see a professional. So now I've been seeing a therapist on and off. And my only thing is, I keep telling people, don't wait until you need to see a therapist. See a therapist when it's still manageable. Because then when you need to see a therapist, that's when it's going to be tougher for you and for them to, like, for you, both of them to heal overall. So I keep telling, you know, whenever girls keep messaging me that, you know, I go through anxiety as well, or I'm really depressed, I keep telling them, tell me where you live and I will send you contacts to therapists. I'll make your appointment for you. Small things like that, you know, because I know it's really scary to take that first step. But I think it's, that's one thing I don't, like, I'm so glad I did. First time I went, I saw my therapist, I cried. And he couldn't understand, like, a lot of it was because of, you know, like, Facebook and how Facebook, a lot of the negative comments were getting to me during the time when I just started seeing him. And he couldn't quite grasp why this was messing with me so much. So what he did was, like, he took, like, an hour off and he tried to research to see the kind of comments I get to better understand why they're getting to me. And that made me realize that, wow, even if, like, I when I get really anxious, I think that really no one cares about me. But this man, this 48-year-old man, took an hour off to go through my comments to help me feel better. And that just made me, that showed me that it's really important to see a professional, because they're going to tell you, you know, he's going to be very true. Like, he's going to tell you it as it is, or whoever it is going to tell you it as it is. And sometimes that's better than being anxious about how it can go.
Yeah, because even just one visit to your therapist or a visit to a doctor can save you years
of
anxiety and grief. And that's really amazing, Aranya. It's incredible what you're doing.
Thank you. And also, I think the biggest thing for me is when I was younger, I used to self-harm. And I know for a fact that if I did see a professional and talk to someone, I would not have reached that point. So if I could even talk to one other person out of going through that, it's definitely worth it.
Definitely, Aranya. That's amazing what you just shared. And thank you for sharing this. And that's another thing that we love about doing this podcast is that, and this is also in tune with what you said about a lot of kids in India hero worshipping. Their heroes. We also realized that this was going on a lot. A lot of kids would just, you know, wake up in the morning and think, I would become the next Aranya Johar. And you also mentioned the whole thing about privilege and how you grew up in a particular set of circumstances. And that is how, that is what made Aranya Johar. And they don't really understand that. They think that they can wake up one morning, write poetry, practice it, perform it, and they would get to the same place. But they need to have a support system as well. They need to have, you know, talent and opportunities. It's so many things. And that is what we really love sharing on this podcast, that the person, the persona that you see also has a backstory. The person that you admire is human. And this person has this long history of struggles and this entire story to tell. For example, for me, one of my personal heroes was Anjali Menon, who is a film director. I'm a Malayali and she's a Malayali film director. I watched all of her movies and I think she's brilliant. But for the longest time, even as an adult, I used to think Anjali Menon was born and then she became Anjali Menon, right? Yeah. And then that's the only connection in my head. And yeah, she came on the show and it was the most real conversation where she explained how for 10 years she worked on her first film and she had to go through this entire struggle to get the film out there, you know, like problems with the production house. She bought the rights back and then she put it out there. And she released this film after a decade of her life was dedicated to it. Mm-hmm. And she saw it fail at the box office. And ever since, mm-hmm. not even a single film has failed because of the lessons she learned there. And that's when Anjali Menon really became a person for me. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. With this podcast, Meenal and I want to do that with every guest we have. And you are, you know, the best person we could have to humanize on our show.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something I keep telling people that I wrote for almost... I performed for 7 years of my life before I put a video out and, you know, got that attention. People think that, that the first piece I put online was the first piece I wrote or performed.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. See?
And I was like, give me a minute.
I started at 13. I started writing at 11.
Exactly. And, you know, that's what I keep telling people that, you know, when a lot of people text me like, oh, you're so much younger than me and you're doing this and it's so cool. And I say, you may be older than me, but it's still about how much time you put and how much experience you have in a certain field. Maybe I would not have been, maybe Brown Girl's Guide to Gender would have come out 4 years later from now, but that's the amount of time I needed to really marinate in my work and marinate in poetry. To figure out what was my style and how did I want to do it, what did I want to talk about. So it's really not about age at the end of the day. And also, I think that's something I realized that when I look at people who've done insane work, I just see the fact that they've done the work, but not what goes behind it. And every time every time I realize that, wow, this is really, like, for example, that was my case with organizing events. I was like, wow, this is such a great event. And literally 2 months after that, I signed myself up for an internship and I had to organize events myself because I wanted to see what goes behind it. I wanted to see how long did it take and things like that so I could truly appreciate it in its actual essence. And I realized that sometimes that there are events that you organize for a week and they do great and there'll be events you organize for 3 months and they'll be shit. So, you know, at the end of the day, you have to just throw yourself at every opportunity and very honestly, be ready for failure. I think that's one thing I keep telling everyone that be ready to fail, you know. It's such an important part of growth.
It's a very powerful message to end on, Aranya. And I can't thank you enough for joining us today. You are such a lovely, lovely girl. And I can't wait to come to India and meet you and speak to you even more. I'm sure there's a lot more we can talk about, but we don't have time. But if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
You can get in touch with me through Instagram. That's where I'm the most active. Mm-hmm. You can. It's Aranya Johar, A-R-A-N-Y-A-J-O-H-A-R. I'm also, I'm pretty responsive on Twitter. I'm not active on Twitter. And also my email is all over all my social medias. And you can just get in touch with me and tell me what you think. Send me links to articles I should read and send me a few dog posts. That works as well.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
I feel like I could talk to you forever, Aranya, but thank you so very much.
Thank you. This has been so fun.
And thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in to our season premiere. We missed you guys as much as I'm pretty sure you missed us too. Aranya is a lovely, lovely human being and a lovely soul. And we just can't wait to see what she has in store for the future of India and for the future of feminism. So thank you, Aranya, for joining us. And we can't wait to hear about your thoughts on this episode and our other episodes. If you have any feedback, do drop us a mail to mail@desioutsiders.com.
You can also follow us on social media @DesiOutsiders and be sure to leave us a review on iTunes because a lot of people like you who want to listen to a podcast like ours are going to find your reviews and are going to start tuning in, and that would help us immensely. So until next time, I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenu.
And we are the Desi Outsiders. Okay, so 3, 2, 1.
Yay!
Welcome to the... Oh. I don't know, you need to shut up after
I'm
you
so
clap
sorry.
Because that's when we start the show.
I was too excited. I apologize. Can we do a double clap now? That's hilarious.
Don't cut it. I'm going to keep it.
Hello?
Yep.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hello?